Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on October 4th, 2015 on the Premier Networks. This is episode 1226. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/techguy and apply for a loan now. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click, screen, rate, and hire the right candidate fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's time to talk high tech as we do every week at this time. Computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-827-5536. Let's see, that spells 8888-ASK, A-S-K, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. Nothing there right now, but as the show fills out, it's almost as if we have a sketch artist in James DeRuvo who will be sketching in words the overall tone and tenor of the show, including links to everything I talk about. After that, we polish it up. We add audio and video. We give you a chance to comment. It's very useful to have. TechGuyLabs.com. Little disappointing news in the technology. What week don't we have? Some excitement and some disappointment. The excitement, I guess, this week provided by Tesla and their new Model X, by Google and their new phone, the 5X and the 6P, and the new tablet and the new Chromecast. Little disappointment news that more breaches, more security breaches. T-Mobile. And a little company that you may not have heard of, but I have and really love, called Patreon. Patreon is a neat idea. It was started by a friend of mine, Jack Conti. He is one of the two folks who composed a group called Pamplemousse. They're a YouTube sensation. They're wonderful. They may do great music. He and his wife, Natalie Dawn, do just fabulous stuff on YouTube, but he realized that they would have millions and millions of views and make $1,000. And he realized this isn't a good model for making a living as a musician. So he created a Patreon, which is a brilliant idea. It's a site where podcasters, musicians, and others can go and ask for patronage. Get it? Patreon. They ask their listeners and their viewers and their readers to kick in a buck or two. And then Patreon distributes it to the podcasters. They keep a little bit. That's why it's a business. And the creators love this. Unfortunately, the Patreon website was hacked. And at least 15 gigabytes worth of password data, donation records, source code. Social security numbers, I don't think so, but credit card numbers for sure. But they were encrypted using bcrypt, which is a very strong and smart way to do it. Not surprised they were using a good way to do it. So it's probably unlikely that it will be the codes inside there will be. Of course, Ashley Madison also used bcrypt for their passwords, and they were able to crack it using flaws, programming errors in the bcrypt. And then the T-Mobile hack, that's kind of an interesting one, too, especially since there are, of course, far more T-Mobile users than there are Patreon users. Patreon one hurts me because it makes me sad because it hurts people who are doing the right thing, supporting shows like this show with their money. T-Mobile got hacked not because T-Mobile got hacked, but because Experian, the credit reporting agency, got hacked. Experian processes the credit applications. You know, when you get a new phone, you have to give them lots of information. Basically, it's a credit check, including your Social Security number. That information is processed and stored not by T-Mobile, but by Experian, very well known, one of the big three credit reporting agencies. According to John Ledger, the CEO of T-Mobile, 15 million people, including new applicants requiring a credit check from September 1st, 2013 through September 16th, 2015. That includes name, address, birth date, Social Security number, driver's license or passport number. Oy, oy, oy. Experian says the encryption that protected those numbers might have been compromised. Ledger says, I'm incredibly angry about this data breach and will institute a thorough review of our relationship with Experian. But of course, our first focus is helping consumers, our customers. Oy. What do you get? Well, 2 years of free credit monitoring and identity resolution services from Experian. Okay. Anyway, I don't know what. There's nothing to say. This isn't you having a good password. This isn't you protecting your data. We do our best, don't we? We talk about that a lot, what you could do to protect yourself. There's nothing you can do in a case like this. You trusted a company, which in turn trusted another company, which in turn was hacked, and the data was released. I don't know what to say about this. Could these companies do better? Yes. Can they do well enough? Maybe not. We've seen breaches continually happen, and even though by now, if you're guarding customer data, you're probably on your guard. We should do the best we can. We should protect this data. Bcrypt, the encryption algorithm, is considered safe and reliable, and there's nothing better, and it still didn't work in some cases. Uh-oh. It seems that determined hackers can in the long run, do anything they want. And I use as the example a fellow named Shelley Adelson, who is a billionaire, one of the richest men in the world. He made his money running casinos in Macau and Las Vegas. He owns and runs the back-end operations for casinos, the back-of-the-house stuff that keeps the money, that keeps track of all this, the important stuff, where the money is. You saw Ocean's 11. He runs that with his Sands casino operations. They were hacked by the Iranians last year. Now, you got to figure, if you run a back-of-house casino operation, you're making a lot of money. So you can afford to get the very best security there is and implement it. And I presume Shelley, who's a smart guy, did exactly that. And it didn't matter. So a couple of things we really need to do. First of all, of course, you need to monitor your credit report and pay attention if people are... Turns out, I didn't realize this, but identity theft is not the number one way credit cards are misused. Credit card fraud much more often happens from a fake credit card that is not tied to anybody than a credit card that is applied for using false identity, stolen identity information. I think it's only 15% of all credit card fraud is from identity theft. Most of it comes from just making up a fake credit card. But it certainly would be prudent for us all to monitor our credit reports, look at your bank statements, your credit card statements, look for strange behavior. We got to change this Social Security number thing. This is not a good way to identify people because it's so hard to change it. You can change your Social Security number. The U.S. government doesn't like it because, of course, all your employment records are tied to it and your Social Security benefits when you retire. And changing it makes just a mountain of paperwork. So they strongly discourage it. Here you have a one-time only unchangeable identifier like your fingerprint that's being tossed around cavalierly. That's a problem. We've got to figure that one out. Meanwhile, this week, chip and sign became, I want to say the law of the land. It's not. It's just MasterCard and Visa decided this is how we're going to do it. You probably got new credit cards with a little chip in it. That works completely different than the old mag stripe. But unlike the rest of the world where that chip is associated with a PIN number, like a password that you can change, it's associated with your signature, which it's, as you know, the worst possible way to it. This is the 18th century way of identifying somebody. Chip and sign. Oh, Lord. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk next. So, yeah, I want like caffeine on the Mac where it just doesn't let the screen sleep. All right, let me look at that. Wake lock. Seems like the opposite of what you'd want, but in fact, this thing is on a charger, so there's no reason for me to worry about the battery. And I want my countdown timer just to stay up. Don't want it to go dark. Wake lock power manager? Most of these things are designed to prevent wake locks. I want one. CPU awake? What was it called? Look, The Martian, I know. I haven't seen it yet. I'm so sad. I need some escape. Ah, it's in the developer options, Archandra. Thank you. Of course that's where it is. It's not in the power option as display options. It's in the stay awake, and it's on. Screen will never sleep while charging. That's what I want. And it's even on, and the screen still sleeps. Oh, son of a gun. But, okay, good. Thank you. So I thought, you're right. That's where I had apparently found it there before because I turned it on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Danger, danger, warning. Warning, Will Robinson. They're out there hacking. See, so some people saw The Martian, didn't see it here. It's very good. Lots of science. Great book. Wonderful book. If you haven't read the book, quickly tonight, read the book. Stay up all night reading the book. Then you can go see the movie. Right, John? You should read the book first. In most cases, that's the case. Something's going to spoil. One is going to spoil the other. The movie's going to spoil the book or the book's going to spoil the movie. Wouldn't you rather have the author's original vision be the first experience of The Martian? John's going, It is Ridley Scott, right, who directed this? And
there's a lot more danger in the
book. There's more danger in the book. So if danger scares you, go. The movie won't spoil it because there's more bad things that happen in the book that don't happen in the movie. But you know the final outcome. I don't know. I loved the book so much. Highly recommend it, and I can't wait to see the movie. Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Phoner, phone ranger, phone person.
Phone person, operator.
Operator, hello, operator. You, I see you have lined up some lovely looking people.
Yes.
Yeah.
International, too.
They've all submitted selfies for your approval.
That's a good
swipe
great
right.
idea.
You swipe right on six of them. Which one should I start with?
How about Matthew in Austria has some important documents on a USB and having trouble?
Uh-oh. Hello, Matthew. I was just in Austria. How are you today?
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Where in Austria are you?
Vienna, actually.
Love Vienna. Oh, I loved Vienna. Had so much fun in Vienna.
That's great. You went to holiday.
We did. We took a river cruise. Right? Yeah, we took a river cruise. Ended up on the Danube and stopped in Vienna for a couple of days. And oh, there's so many beautiful palaces and museums and oh. I just had so much fun.
Glad you liked it. Leo, I have a question about my USB stick. I have a laptop with me, and I plug in the USB device. It shows on the desktop that the computer actually recognizes the USB device. When I try to open it, it actually displays all the files, all the documents. However, when I try to click on them, it says it can't be accessed because it's corrupted.
Yeah. Well, that's good news. It means that some of it is okay anyway, at least the file allocation tables. There are good programs for recovering USB. Recovering USB is not, a USB thumb drive is not any different than recovering any other hard drive.
Okay, very
except
good.
That it's hidden behind the USB interface, so some low-level stuff just won't work. But you can run most of the recovery tools, which will try to – what they will try to do, and I think in this case this might work, is rebuild the file catalog to get at the underneath files. It's
okay.
Worth a try. Let's see. Chat room, recommend some good ones for this because I've used quite a few different, and I'm not sure what the best ones are these days. They all kind of work the same. They run through. What they'll do is they'll go sector by sector through the drive. You could actually, Windows, as Tripod's pointing out, does have its own. If you right-click on the drive and click Properties, you can scan and fix errors. That may be sufficient.
That didn't work, actually.
You already tried that. Okay. Yeah, that's
and
the most.
In the terminal, I tried the check disk one.
Yeah, that's the same thing. So I guess okay. It's time to go to something a little more hardcore like Recuva, which is spelled silly, R-E-C-U-V-A.
Okay.
It's from a company called Piriform. There's a free download you can try before you buy. The risk is that the more you mess with it, the more chances you'll damage it in such a way that you cannot recover.
Oh.
So you have to kind of be a little bit careful. But a lot of people have used, and I've recommended before, Recuva. This is why backup is so important. What's on the drive? Something you can't afford to lose?
Exactly. Some legal documents. The problem is I actually made a backup on an external hard drive, but the external hard drive is broken, and I was sure that I could recover those files from the USB drive.
The worst of all possible worlds. You've got two bad backups. That's why I always say, I'm not going to preach to you. But 3-2-1 backup, three copies, two different media types, and one in the cloud is always the best way for stuff you can't afford to lose. I would say try this Recuva and just cross your fingers. At some point, there's nothing you can do. The USB interface kind of hides the details of the physical drive from the operating system. It's not like a Direct Connect SATA drive where you can actually work on the drive at a low level. USB is an interface that really pretty much hides all the details. So a lot of tools won't work as well on USB as they'll work on a SATA internal SATA drive. But Recuva is designed to do that. It's certainly worth trying. And if it doesn't work, then I don't know exactly what you can do. Tripod says, don't open the thumb drive. Don't double-click it. You have the thumb drive mounted on the disk. Click it and copy. This is an interesting idea. Copy the entire drive to the hard drive. And then instead of trying to copy individual files, see if you can make a copy of the entire drive. And that's a good tip. Also in our chat room, another recommendation for... Actually, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We have a lot of them. Let me put this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. And that's what we usually will do. And we'll try to make a list. We've done this before. We probably can reuse that list of all the different ways to do it. There are some that are less intuitive. Recuva's pretty easy to use. My sense is it's all basically trying to do the same thing. But it's a good idea if you can image that disk, make a copy of that disk before you mess with it. I would do that. Matthew, nice to know you're listening from Vienna. Wow. That is so cool. 8888 Ask Leo. Next, Kenny from Temple, Texas. Hi, Kenny.
Oh, hello. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just got a new iPhone, and I wanted to know what's the best... ad blocker out there. I know there's
there's some good ones.
Came out when iOS 9 came out.
Yeah. So how do you like it, first of all? You got the iPhone 6S?
Yeah, I got the 6S. Bought it from a Best Buy, and they had a higher price. And luckily, I looked at the receipt. And
good.
Was able to get them to match
Apple. Hey, you're supposed to match apples. Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, Apple controls the channel so well that you really can't get a deal on an iPhone ever. But you shouldn't have to pay more.
this was $50 above Apple's suggestion.
What? That's ridiculous. Yeah. So I've been a big fan of this new iPhone. I got the 6S Plus. The pictures I've been taking are incredible. Love it. Highly recommend it. This ad blocker thing, a little controversial. It's available in all iOS 9 devices, not just the new iPhone. The one that is the easiest is Crystal. The one that gives you more features is OneBlocker, the number one and blocker. I would install both and try both. It's easy to switch either on or off and see which one you like best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, speaking of ads, brought to you by our great friends at Prosper.com. Prosper's such a good idea for people who need a quick influx of cash up to $35,000 in as little as 5 days. Of course, there's lots of places you can go. You can use your credit cards. That's probably the worst place, simply for the cost. The interest rate is so high. Or those loan places you see in the shopping malls or the strip malls. Don't go there either. Same thing. Very high loan rates. You can go to your Uncle Vinny. but he's going to hold it over your head for the rest of your life. I'd go to Prosper. You could also go to a bank. This is like a bank, only better. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending service. So what they do is they have investors who want to lend money to people like you. And people who need money go there. You can actually fill out a very simple form on the website at prosper.com/techguy. It will not affect your good credit to fill this form out. But it will give you the rate you're going to pay for a loan and how much you can get and how soon you can get it. So it's a really it's a great solution for people who are looking to borrow money. Get a great low fixed rate. You could pay off your credit cards. That'd be a great thing to do. Fix up your house. Plan a vacation. This would be great if you want to start a business. You need a little cash to get started in a business. And do not use your credit cards. Get it at a low interest rate. Maybe you're a filmmaker. You always hear that story of Rodriguez, right, making his films on his credit, maxing out his credit cards. Wow, that's risky. It's too bad he didn't have the Prosper back then. Prosper.com/tech guy. Go there right now and you can check your low rate and not affect your good credit. Up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. Prosper, prosper.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get ready to get down. I never heard this, but I love it. Nathan Staten, our musical director, he's digging deep into his musical trash bag to come up with. Well, it's more like a Santa's bag. Hey, let me talk about ad blockers very quickly, because this was a hot topic when Apple announced it. On iOS 9, they were going to allow you to use an ad blocker in Safari. Now, it's kind of limited because it only affects stuff you use Apple's Safari browser with. So if you use a different browser like Chrome, it doesn't affect that. If you use apps with ads, it doesn't affect that. And most of the time, I think people, I don't know, at least I look at how I use my iPhone, certainly, maybe not so much on my iPad, but I don't use Safari that much. The problem is that, unfortunately, there's a battle going on between users and ad networks. Sites, little sites, big sites who want to monetize, who want to, make a business out of their website. Take The Verge and Gadget, or little guys like John Gruber's Daring Fireball. Lots of wonderful blogs have little ads. Unfortunately, most of the time, they don't sell those ads themselves. It's not practical. They go to an ad network, and Google runs one, Yahoo runs one, Microsoft runs one. There are lots of them. Google's the biggest by far. So they basically put a little code in there. They sign up for an account. They put a little code on their website that says, insert Google ad here on that website. And then Google handles the rest. It puts the ads in, it sells the ads, gives you a cut. Doesn't give you a big cut, gives you a cut. I've done it in the past on sites. Don't do it anymore, but I've done it in the past. And it's a very effective way to, especially for a small blog, to make a little money to kind of defray the costs. It costs you something to have a website. You got to pay for the hosting and the service and all of that stuff. So, unfortunately, many of these ad services have gotten kind of out of hand, and you probably noticed this. You'll go to a website, It's really bad on mobile, but even on a desktop, you go to a website and there's not just a lot of ads, not just a lot of chunks of the page used up by ads, but ads that take over the page that you have to click around to read the stuff, jumping monkeys, punch the belly fat, whatever it is. They're more and more obnoxious. And of course, there's a reason for that, because obnoxious ads get your attention. And for the most part, I think we ignore banner ads on websites, don't you? I mean, honestly. You know, I mean, when did you ever click on a banner ad on a website? And even if you did, it's very rare. And most of the time, I think we don't even see them. We've learned to just tune it out so we can read around the ads what we want. Ad blockers have been around for a long time. The idea being that a couple of benefits. One, you speed up page load time because you don't load all this extra stuff. Two, you get rid of annoying pictures on the screen. Both of those are, I understand why, but there's an even more serious issue. Some ads can contain malware, and so people who are concerned about malware may want to block ads, especially flash-based ads. And finally, ads can track you. Google certainly does. But if by having a little Google window on a website, you're giving Google access to information about you, who you are, and they can track you across any other website with Google Ads. And since most websites have Google Ads, they kind of can see how you move around on the internet. Why do they want to know that? Well, mostly I would say, and this is what they say, to customize the ads they serve you. If they see you, shopping, or see you buying things, or see you visiting certain kinds of sites, let's say you're shopping for a car, they'll note that you visited a lot of car dealer sites. They might give you more car ads on other sites as well. They kind of get the signal that you're looking for a new car. And boy, advertisers would love to know that, wouldn't they? You're wasting an ad if you're advertising to somebody who's not buying a new car. If you're a car dealer, you don't want, if you're not in the market for a car, there's no point. You want to advertise only to people who are buying a new car or are going to buy a new car soon. So that kind of information is valuable. It's gold to advertisers. But some people feel it's an intrusion. It's in violation of their privacy. And so they'd like to block that tracking as well. So there's four good reasons for running ad blockers. It improves performance. It improves the aesthetics. Avoids malware. Turns off tracking. Lots of sites say, though, the problem with it is by putting an ad blocker on, you're basically looking at our content without paying for it. Some of them even say it's like stealing. I'm not sure I'd go that far. I understand both sides. Look, I'm ad-supported. I have been my whole life. I've never, ever charged people for access to the radio shows or the podcasts or anything else I've done. I've always made money on them by advertising. So I love ads and advertising. I know that's a strange thing to say, but it's democratizing. It means you can get great content without paying for it. The advertisers pay for it. You pay for it with your attention on the ads. When you don't see the ads, in effect, I think you've broken that social contract a little bit. But at the same time, those four benefits are pretty serious, and it's much worse on mobile. Ads on mobile can actually make a page unusable. And mobile, you're paying for the bandwidth. In most cases, you have bandwidth caps. It's so bad on mobile that I can understand why Apple, in this new version of iOS, said, you know what, we're going to allow. They didn't put an ad blocker in, but they said, we're going to allow ad blockers. So if you have an iOS 9 device, you go to the App Store and you search for blockers. And there's quite a few, Crystal and Purify and One Blocker. There are many more. Those are the three that come to mind. There's the big three. You download it. And as soon as you download it, now you can go into settings and turn it on in Safari. You have to go to the settings and Safari and turn it on. So you need to download it, run it, and then go turn it on. If you run it, most of the time, if you run Crystal or Purify or OneBlocker, it'll say, okay, next step, change your settings. At that point, you see fewer ads. I'm noticing they don't block all ads. And in fact, Crystal made a deal. You don't have to accept it, but they made a deal for something called acceptable ads. And this is an interesting attempt to solve this conundrum of how do you have ads pay for the sites without annoying people and causing security and tracking issues. Well, they have an acceptable ads policy. Companies like Google pay for access to you so you'll see their ads. Now, if you go in the settings in Crystal, you can turn that off. So you may want to turn it on or off depending on your feelings about all of this. Crystal's very easy to use. Purify's very easy to use. there are benchmarks out there. Some are better than others in terms of how fast they make your browsing. I noticed that ads are starting to squeeze around them. Of course, this is a technology war. And the people who do ads, they're not going to give up. Oh, okay, I guess you don't want to see your ads. We'll never show them again. No, they're figuring out ways to get around these blockers, and they seem to be succeeding. So I don't know how much longer blockers will be useful. I don't think it's wrong to use a blocker. I understand why people use blockers. And of the blockers, you know, Crystal's easy. You know, and you can decide whether to have some ads, so-called acceptable ads or not. One blocker is more powerful and more configurable. So if you want to get into the, if you're that kind of person, you want to get into the weeds there, that's a good choice. They all kind of roughly do the same thing. Google's responded to this with an interesting new thing called Google Contributor, which I kind of like and I'm paying into. You can, if you go to google.com/contributor, essentially you can pay Google not to put those Google ads on the sites that have them, which is most of them. And then they give some of that money, some of the money they keep, some of the money they give to the site. So in a way, you're saying, I want to support the sites, but I don't want to see ads. I like that. You can do as whatever amount of money you want, up to $10 a month. So I opted in for $10 because I want to use an ad blocker, but I want to feel bad about it. I do use ad blockers, but I also want to support those websites. So if you want, if you have a guilty conscience and you want to help out, Contributor might be one way to do that. Give a few bucks, and that money goes to the websites that you like. And in fact, they probably make more money off of that than they would off of the Google ads. It's very controversial. Not quite the apocalypse we thought it would be. According to reports so far, this ad blocking hasn't really much changed anything. Good news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm changing some settings on my Mac. What I want to see a clock. I don't see a clock anymore. This is the new El Capitan. Oh, I see what the problem is. iClock Pro doesn't work with El Capitan. This is what happened. Now I have to disable this thing. This doesn't seem to work with El Capitan. You know, a lot of menu things stopped working in El Capitan because... Wow, that's... Oh, there we go. Let me look at iClock Pro, see what they say. Because I was using that for my stopwatch and stuff. They probably say, does it work for El Capitan? You see, Pick of the Week by Leo Laporte. But that was a... Yes, it doesn't work for 10.11. You know what? A lot of these guys use a hack to put stuff on the menu.
You'll have to use boot camp and run, you know.
No. New version, especially for Epic Capitan, coming soon. Meanwhile, I guess I have to disable the damn thing, the darn thing.
And there's the system clock will go up in your menu bar.
Remove. And the reason I don't have a system clock is because I turn it off so I could use iClock Pro. A lot of stuff stopped working. How come I have to log in each time? Apple is way too big on the security thing. Way too big. I already authenticated for one control panel. I shouldn't have to authenticate again, should I? But now I see the time. Oh, I want seconds. Play with seconds. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Laverne is in the Bronx. Hi, Laverne.
Hi, Leo. I'm having a panic attack. This is what happened. I set my Mac to upgrade to El Capitan. It did its thing overnight. I woke up the following morning, did what I usually do on the computer, and went off to work. When I came back to log into my email account, and I use solely Gmail.
Okay.
When I opened up my account, every single email that I wrote or actually received prior to that moment had disappeared, wiped.
Well, here's the good news.
Okay.
It will still be on gmail.com.
Okay.
So so I presume you use Apple's mail application with Gmail.
Yes, I link it, but I very seldom look at it.
Yeah. So if you just use the browser and go to gmail.com, you can relieve your fear and your tension at this point and see that, in fact, it's all there, unless you deleted it. But you'd have to actually go to the website and delete it, and I don't think that's the case. So, and certainly El Capitan cannot do that. However, El Capitan does update mail considerably. The new mail is considerably updated. And after you install it, mail is supposed to go through your old email and make it compatible again. I'm guessing that step didn't happen. So, so mail is just blank, right? It doesn't have anything in it.
It was blank, and then I started changing my passwords like nobody's business.
No. That's not necessary. It's just because this happens when you update the operating system. In fact, during the break, was running through a little process of figuring out why I can't see the clock on my menu bar. Turns out I used an incompatible program. Apple turned the program off.
Ah.
Easy to fix. Mail is changed in El Capitan, and Apple does this fairly frequently. They changed it to the point where they had to re-ingest the database, and that's a step that didn't happen. So probably not. It's probably all still there, but the fear not, because it's on Google's system anyway, regardless of what happens locally. I doubt that the upgrade deleted it. I think it just didn't ingest it.
Yeah, so. Because it started to come back after about 2 hours, bits and pieces from each of the previous 12 months are starting to appear, and I'm wondering, what happened to the previous 4 years?
It's almost certainly still there.
Okay.
It's just this sometimes happens when there's an update. I'm looking to see several El Capitan mail problems users report. You can fix mail by turning on the accounts one by one. So one thing you could do is go into the account settings on mail and disable. There's a box, checkbox that says enable Google Mail. Disable all the accounts. Disable them all.
Okay.
And then you might try re-enabling Google Mail and hoping what you want it to do is go, oh, hey, hi, you already have some Google Mail on this computer. Would you like me to ingest that?
Right.
That's what it needs to do.
So in the mail program, I would go to...
It's in the settings. On a Mac, it's Command, comma, to get the settings. So I have mail open, Command, comma. You've restarted the computer, I presume.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if that doesn't work, the next step would be to delete the Google account.
Okay.
And then redo it. You know, recreate it as you did the first time. And what will happen at that point is it will download all the mail from the Google server, and you should be back to normal. That will take a while.
Okay, as long as I don't miss any of my historical
stuff. No, unless you deleted it on Gmail itself, it's all still there.
Oh, no, I didn't delete it. No,
of course not. And that's you know what? Here is the real advantage of using a web-based mail service like that, is even if you lost the computer... And you got a new computer, you just log on, you know, you add your Gmail account and it would start flowing in. It may take a day or two to flow in.
Okay.
Because it's a lot, and Google limits it, so you don't kind of suck all the data out of Google all at once. But it will all get there. It's all there. And just to reassure yourself, open your browser, go to gmail.com, log into your Google account, and you'll see everything's there.
Okay. Thank you, Leo.
What a relief. Yeah, we've talked about this before. The old days of mail, pop mail, they called it, post office protocol. And by the way, you could still do it this way. You would log into your email account, usually from an internet service provider, get your email on your local computer, and then delete it on the server. And that was because hard drive space was dear, and people at ISPs didn't want to pay for it to store your mail. That's not our problem. You get it. You be responsible for it. Those days, thankfully, long gone. There are newer services like IMAP, which essentially say the ISP or your mail company keeps everything on their server, and your mail program is kind of a window into it. And if you get a new computer or whatever, or you have multiple computers, you have a tablet, whatever, it's still logging into the same account. It'll have the same exact stuff there. The folder structure will be the same. Everything that you ever mailed will be in the sent mail folder, all of that. That's nice. Gmail is kind of IMAP. It's Google's IMAP. Google can't do it. You know, Google's like Apple. We got to do a little different. We got to make it a little different. So it's close to IMAP and works similarly as most webmail accounts do. If you had Outlook Mail, the old Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, in most cases, unless you're explicitly saying get it off of the servers, it's preserved on their servers and then downloaded to your system. So you in effect have two copies. That's probably the way to do it, in my opinion. Now we say hi to Don in Arizona. Hey, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, Leo. I got a Galaxy Note 2, and I have a Samsung 10.1 tablet, and I put the device manager on both products, and the only thing that it sees is the tablet. I'm really more concerned about it seeing the phone.
Yeah, I love this. This is the Android Device Manager, and it's a free service from Google. It's kind of like Find My iPhone on the iPhone. In fact, it's exactly like it. Every device that's registered, you can see it. You can see where it is. You can erase it remotely. You can make it go ding, ding, ding to find it. And you're right. A phone is very important. Which phone is it? You said a Note 2?
Yeah, I have the Galaxy Note 2.
I bet you the problem is, what version of Android is on there? I bet you don't have a late enough version of Android to use it.
Well, I've tried to do the update. It's a Verizon version.
Yeah, they're not updating it. So this is a problem because it's a general problem with Android, because Google can't just, like Apple, just pushes the update, doesn't care. Everybody gets it at the same time. Google cannot do that with Android. They have to give the update, the suggested update, to Samsung, which then has to modify it because, as you know, Samsung's not pure Android. Then Samsung gives it to Verizon, which has to check it to make sure it works fine. And by that time, 5 years later, you're not getting an update. And that's really a problem in the Google world. Google's done some things to fix it. It's not much they can do. And in this case, Android's device manager requires a newer version of Android, I believe, than your phone is using. And that's why it won't work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. Got the new Moto 360 smartwatch. Just came out about 3 weeks ago from Motorola. Updated styling. Same insides, pretty much. It's a round one. I like round watches better than square watches like the Apple. But I've really come to the conclusion, I don't care if it's Android or iPhone, smartwatches are dopey. They just don't. They don't, you know, maybe there are a few cases where, and you know, if you really need one, where it makes sense. I've talked to a friend who's a nurse who says, oh, it's great because on the nurse station, I'm not allowed to take my phone out of my pocket, but I can surreptitiously check, my calendar and my texts and sometimes even respond. I could see who's calling on the phone. There are, if you cannot access your phone for some reason, having a watch that kind of reflects on a tiny, teeny, weeny screen what's going on inside the phone might be useful. But as somebody who can, take my phone out of my pocket, I almost always find it's faster, easier, more complete to use the phone. If I want to know something, I just use the phone. And I think, most people probably are like that. So I say that because I know sometimes there's, believe it or not, pressure to buy something. Like, well, I got to have the new thing. And, in the case of the Apple Watch, it's a minimum of $350. You could spend a lot more. Android Wear Watch is a little bit less expensive, but still a couple $100. You could use that money much better, frankly, in most cases. I wear these watches and I try to make them work in my life. And all I find it is annoying. The one thing, it's a heart rate monitor, but it's not as good a heart rate monitor as one of the chest straps would be. So, just a word of warning. You know what the Apple Watch really is all about? I realized this. Apple realized this a long time ago. It's a badge. You know, every time you buy an Apple product, you get in the box two decals, two Apple logos. I don't know any other company that does that. But Apple people want to put those decals on their cars, in their houses, on their foreheads. They love to say, I am in the Apple Army. I'm part of it. I'm part of the movement. And, you know, I was that way, too, when Apple, for the first 20 years, because Apple was the little guy struggling, and I felt was making a superior product. In many cases, they still make the superior product. And so that was when you had to say, hey, pay attention. Apple's making great stuff. Don't dismiss them out of hand. I'm proud to be in the Apple Army. Now Apple's the most valuable company in the world. There's no question people know about Apple and like its products. And I would bet a lot more people think Apple makes the best products out there, whether it's a computer or a tablet or a watch or a phone. So there's really no need to wear those stickers and decals, but Apple fans still do, and I think the watch is like that. It announces I'm in the club. See, I'm in the club. And I think it's one of the reasons Apple did not make a round watch that looks like a regular watch. Most of these Android Wear watches just look like wristwatches. They're kind of big and clunky, but, you know, that's the fashion anyway. Big, clunky wristwatch. It could be any old wristwatch. Even the faces on the Android Wear watches are meant to fool you into thinking they're regular wristwatches. There's normal wristwatches. Not so the Apple Watch. They want it to look like the Apple Watch and nothing else. Unique bands, unique shape. And of course they do. It's the decal you wear on your wrist. I'm in the Army. I'm part of the club. They're so smart. You kind of want to say, oh, I feel manipulated. No, they're just smart. They're good. They're good. I look at them with admiration and say, boy, these guys know what they're doing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 8882. And then, you know, it's so funny because when I got this new iPhone, several people who are also in the club, several, not one, came up to me and said, look at the screws in the bottom. Isn't that cool? They match the phone. They're pink as well. Ooh, see what care Apple puts in to its products. You're starting to sound like you're brainwashed just a little bit. Brian in Santa Ana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. I just ordered the new Nexus 6P.
Oh, me too. I'm excited.
Yep, and I've run into a little upgrade headache. Uh-oh. I cannot find 3-amp USB-C wall chargers for love or money, except for the Google one, which is a little bit overpriced.
How much does Google want for its...
I only found one car charger that looks right. Borderline.
How much does Google charge for its charger?
$25.
That's not that bad. It's not $90, which other companies might charge. So Type C, which is the connector that Google's using on its new phones, you're seeing it on other phones. I think you're pretty soon in the next year or so, you'll see it everywhere, including, I believe, on the next generation iPhones. There's a better connector. Like the Apple Lightning connector, can go in either way. That's fantastic. Anybody who's in the middle of the night tried to connect an Android device or another smartphone with a micro USB connector and jammed it in the wrong way and broken it or damaged the phone will be so happy. It just snaps in. It's got a nice, secure, you know, feeling in there. It doesn't fall out. It also has some real advantages. If Google, and we don't know quite yet how they're going to do this, but if Google supports the USB 3.1 spec, then this thing will be fast. It'll be able to carry data. It'll be able to charge as well as be charged. It goes both ways. It's a nice spec. They did support it that way on the Pixel laptop that Google makes. That's a Type-C connector. So this is a really much more capable connector, and I'm very, very, very glad to see companies starting to adopt it. So you'll see a ton of chargers. Now, you're looking for a high-amp charger, a 3-amp charger. That will support quick charging. Even 2 amps would support quick charging. I'm not sure you need 3 amps. But I would go to monoprice.com. They have a lot of USB Type-C connectors and cables. I've kind of stocked up on them. And I'm sure there's more coming all the time. So if you search Monoprice, if Monoprice doesn't have it, then I would just wait. There will be a lot. Remember, you're not getting your phone for a few weeks, I'm sure. When is yours supposed to come?
First week of November.
Yep, me too. So we got a little time. We got a month to figure this all out. Let me just see if Monoprice has a charger. You know, really, you could use by the way, you could get a Type-C to a Type-B cable or A cable and then use any high-powered charger with it, right? You don't have to have the wire built into the charger.
All the ones I found are like 2 amps, even the high-end ones from Anker and stuff. It's like I haven't been able to find any 3s.
Yeah, Anker makes quick chargers, but they're only 2 amps, huh? I don't, you know, let's wait and see if it makes a difference, you know? Does Google say it'll charge 50% faster with a 3-amp charger?
Well, the Google specs say the charger is 5 volts, 3 amps. Yeah. So I'm assuming that's what's required for the 10 minutes charging.
Right. I doubt it's required for to charge it at all, but it might be required to get the fastest charging. You know, it's more bits in. More electrons in faster gives you a faster charge. Let me just see. Have you looked at MonoPrice?
Yeah, I didn't see anything that high powered.
Well, there's not been a need for it up to now. You know, USB-C can go up to 100 watts, so the capability's there, but nobody's been asking for it. So I would bet now that Google's announced these phones, remember, they only announced them 4 days ago, I would bet that you'll see some 3-amp chargers. And you don't need, again, to have it be, you know, you just need it to have a USB charger, and then you can put a Type-C cable into it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you're in charge of hiring at your business, you need to know about ZipRecruiter. You already know, of course, that the internet has made hiring easier, I guess, because there's hundreds of job boards out there. But it's made it harder to figure out which job board to use. Hiring is so important, too. You really don't want to hire bad people. You want to hire the best people because they are what makes your company great. So use ZipRecruiter. One click of the mouse, you post to more than 100 job boards. So your posting gets everywhere. They'll match you up to their current 6 million resumes in their database. So within a 24-hour period, you're going to get a lot of applicants. And here's the beauty part. You don't have to get phone calls and emails to your number, to your email address. You're going to get them into the ZipRecruiter interface where it makes it easy to screen them, to rate them, and to hire the right person fast. 100-plus job sites, one click of the mouse, social networks too, like Twitter and Craigslist. Scott, a happy ZipRecruiter client, told us this is a quote, "The recruiting process used to be so painful. Before, I'd post to several places, get a million resumes, but only a few responses from qualified candidates. It was torture. But with ZipRecruiter, we post once, we get qualified candidates in one easy-to-review place. And this is the most important part as far as I'm concerned. We've hired some of our best employees using ZipRecruiter. What more do you want? Try it free, right? Free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. 4 days free. It'll give you a good idea of how wonderful ZipRecruiter is. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. Free right now for the first 4 days. Oh, and we thank him for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I just looked on Amazon and did find a 20-watt USB charger. The Talent Cell. It's got 3 ports on it, and it can support up to 20 watts. That's good, right? All USB chargers are 5 volts. That's the standard. They can't be more than that. But the amount of amperage, the amperage can vary. And, of course, watts equals amps times volts. So if they have a 20-watt adapter, that means it's 5 volts times 4 amps. It's a 4-amp adapter with 3 ports on. It's still $25, though. So I don't think Google's price is actually that high for the adapter. Good news, though. Good news. I think we're going to see a lot of these because it's a standard. Apple doesn't own it. Google doesn't own it. No one owns Type-Cs. Like the other USB connectors, it's a standard. I'm thrilled that Apple kind of sent a signal by using it for their MacBook as the power charger for their newest MacBook. That, to me, says, yeah, we're going to start moving away from proprietary adapters. Notebooks are terrible, right? Every notebook has a different adapter. Phones have settled a little bit, and that's because of the European Union, which has said all phones have to use micro USB charging. And that's really settled things out quite a bit. I'd love to see this Type-C everywhere. Let's make it everywhere. Then I don't have to buy new cables. I can just use one adapter. So we looked on Monoprice. We looked on Amazon. Monoprice didn't have anything, but Amazon did have a 20-watt adapter. But it's $25. But it does have three USB ports. I would imagine that the 20 watts are split among the three. So you, if you plug in all three, you're not going to get a total of 20 watts. The other question is, does it actually charge faster? And that is not necessarily a given, because there's circuitry in the phone that may well limit the number of watts that you can use. Even if you have a 20-watt adapter, the phone is not going to necessarily accept all of that. It may say, "No, nah, you know, I'll take 5 watts. Thank you very much. That's plenty." So it remains to be seen. These phones are brand new, these new Google phones. They look good, but remains to be seen exactly how they work. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. John is in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, John, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, longtime listener, first time caller.
Thank
love
you.
Your program.
Thank you.
Got a couple of different questions real quick. I'm a Mac user, iPhone, Apple lover. I got a kind of in the club, I guess.
You're in the club, my friend. And I, by the way, don't think I'm dismissive of the club. I'm in the club, too. I'm not exclusive to the club.
I know, and I tried the Galaxy 5, and I just miss my phone so much because everything hooks up to my... I've got two MacBooks, the iMac, and I still use a regular Windows-based computer, which brings me back to my original question.
Apple benefits you, and this is no accident, by going all Apple. The more Apple you use, the happier you'll be.
Well, I like because everything syncs up. All my calendars sync up.
That's not an accident.
By my phone, by my iPad, the whole thing. I like my pictures, everything syncs.
Yep. And you'll like having a Macintosh even better.
Yeah, I've got two iMacs and two Mac ProBooks, so I'm kind of...
So you
like,
still you use Windows because you have to, not because you want to.
Yeah, I do. Apple seems to have things the way they make things simple for non...
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm totally a fan. Yep.
But I've learned a lot from your program. But here's my questions. I've got a couple real quick. The first one is, I'm worried about internet security.
As we all should be. It's pretty obvious.
And you know, with everything, it has a different password.
Good.
I have a separate vault in my iPhone that keeps all my passwords.
Good.
And they're all different.
Good.
My question is, I was thinking about trying to upgrade to do either the Dashlane or the iPass.
Yep.
Now, will they work on the iPhone and the Mac since
yes.
the Mac has the automatic?
Yeah. So Dashlane, it's one pass or one password. We're both originally Macintosh products. They've spread out to the rest of the ecosystem. I use and recommend LastPass because it's completely platform agnostic. It works on everything. And I like their security model. They're also $1 a month. If you want the pro version, and you do need the pro version if you want to use it on mobile. But $12 a year is very, I think, very fair for the very good service.
Sure.
But any password vault will do the most important things, which is encourage you to have a long, strong, unique password for every place. No sharing passwords.
Right.
And that's the most important thing because those are not memorable. So without a password vault, that's going to be tough. Password Vault helps you by keeping track of everything, and then you only have to remember one password. That's the password for the vault.
Right. But normally the passwords I have in my vault, they're not near as strong as they should be if it was on LastPass.
That's one thing LastPass does, which I love, which it'll do a security audit. And it'll recommend which ones are shared between sites, which ones are too weak. It'll recommend changing those. And they even have it work. It's kind of a little hit and miss, but they have a button that says change the password. And it will automatically go to that site and kind of start the password change process for you. Makes it as easy as it can be to kind of fix. So run the if you get LastPass and you can get it for free, run the security check on your passwords.
Okay.
And it'll import passwords from your other stuff too.
And would you suggest doing this, the pro version, on my Mac?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You can use it on anything.
And you can use it on multiple users,
and
right?
It's identical on all of them.
Okay.
Multiple users, that's another nice feature. And I don't know about Dashlane. I'm sure Dashlane and 1Password and RoboForm will do this. But on LastPass, when my wife says, what's the password for our Wi-Fi, I can share it with her. And she uses LastPass, and I use LastPass, and she actually can see it. And you can share it in two ways. One, She can see the password and modify it. Two, she can't see it or modify it. She just gets access to it in LastPass. And so that's kind of nice if you want to share a password with somebody but don't want them to know what it is.
Right.
So there's a lot of features. It's a little bit of a pain to move to a system like this, but, you know, you can't stop people from hacking Ashley Madison or Experian or T-Mobile.
Right.
You can't stop it. But by using a unique password on every site, you can limit the damage it does.
Right, I agree. And it's like I said, I'm gearing more toward that, and I know those passwords are going to be a lot stronger than what I would make.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I agree with you.
Good. Well, I'm glad you do that. That's nice.
As I always do. My next question is this. I need to, on some of my off stuff that doesn't matter, I have an OXP system that's about ready to crash.
Okay.
So I'm going to go to the Windows 7.
Good.
I don't use it for a lot, but I was thinking about, okay, if I do the X7, now I've got to buy the Outlook, the whole package of Outlook or Office. But I was looking at the Office 365 where you buy the subscription. Are you a fan of that?
Yeah, that's what I do. It's the personal edition is $8 a month. That's less than $100 a year, right? And you get unlimited storage on OneDrive. That's worth it just by itself. That could be, you know, you put everything on OneDrive. And OneDrive works on Macs, by the way, and iPhones. So it's not even limited to Microsoft. The new Microsoft is great. It works everywhere. So, yes, the subscription, I think, is a good deal. In fact, that's the way I go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's a new, somebody sent me an article from phys.org, phys.org, on new battery, new lithium-ion battery technology that looks promising. So they're working on stuff. They definitely, but look, there's no room for a battery in this thing. It's like, and yet, all day. When I was in L.A., it was a challenging day because we went from early morning till late at night. And actually, by the time I got on the airplane, it was 20%, so it was making me nervous. It was about 8 o'clock. So I did use a little battery and zipped it up. But I think it would have gotten me home because of airplane mode and all that. I was using it a lot. It's good. I know. I'm sorry.
Someday.
You like your phone. Stick with your phone. It's just a great phone.
It's 2 years old.
Well, I'm just saying you're due, but you don't have to.
Yeah, we'll see.
You don't have
to. It's the battery thing, though.
I know.
I mean, I'm in here, so I'm at 96%, so that's not bad.
No.
And I'm not messing with it either.
In most cases, you can keep it plugged in at work and stuff. It's just those weird days when you're traveling or you're just not going to be able to plug it in anywhere.
It's those baseball games.
Baseball games will kill you.
AT&T Park kills the phone.
Kill you. I agree. And I don't know if this would do better, frankly. I mean, it might not. The new Google phone, I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm hopeful. It has a giant battery in it, biggest battery I've ever seen, 3,450 milliamp hours. And Marshmallow supposedly really does a good job, blah, blah, blah. So we'll see how it works. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK, Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech, and that could be anything with a chip in it, anything at all. I love talking about technology. Sam in San Diego. Hi, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for your services and all the help you give us. I remember a few months ago you talked about the larger phone for grandma.
Yes.
And I looked all over on your notes and stuff. I couldn't find it. Do you remember what you recommend?
Yeah, if grandma doesn't want a smartphone. If grandma wants a smartphone, then you're just going to have to get a big screen phone and set the characters very big, and that will work. But there are a lot of phones.
She doesn't care about a smartphone.
Yeah.
She just wants someone to talk to. That's all. So regular phone will do.
That's all she wants is something to talk.
Right.
So there are actually a number of phones designed specifically for people who have low vision, who buttons are hard to use, for grandma, lack of a better description. The one I talked about, I think, was the Jitterbug.
Oh, okay.
And I really like it. I got it for my mom. She was insulted, but I and ended up getting her an iPhone. But I think if really it's just about phone calls, it's, you know, it's got big menus. It's got an amplified speaker. It'll work with the hearing aids. It's just, there's a lot of things. It even has a kind of like an OnStar thing that you can press a button for emergency services. It really is well designed for elders. And it's affordable. It's sold directly from GreatCall.com. They created it.
Okay.
And they have their own service and all of that stuff. It's fairly affordable. Yeah, this is the one I was talking about, and I think it's a good service for grandma. Because grandma probably isn't using Instagram and Facebook. And
right.
Now, no, if grandma is, then getting a big phone like the new iPhone 6 Plus or the Galaxy Note would be able. And my mom likes the big phones because she can make the text big and read it and everything. But it's more complicated, frankly.
Right, right. So as far as this thing, the Jitterbug, that sounds like the perfect thing. Do they have to have line in there, like with AT&T and stuff?
No. Okay. It's all, the service comes through the Jitterbug. If you want to make it easy on her, you can pay for it. It's not very expensive. And I do that for my mom. I pay for her phone service, and that way she has a nice phone, and she'll use it. You know, because if I said, "Mom, you just get a phone," she'll say, "No, it's too expensive. I have my landline. I don't." So this is a good. I think it's a great choice, and for emergencies, it's really nice. It's small enough she can have it. I'll put a link in the show notes to an article from Phone Arena on 7 phones designed for older users. There's quite a few in here, like the Snap Phone and the Doro and the. This one's kind of cool, the Just 5. It's very colorful. It's very simple, and it has really big buttons, including a super button on the back, which contacts emergency contacts, so you can have it designed to call you. That's called Just 5, J-U-S-T, and the number 5. There are lots of interesting choices out there. I'll put a link in the show notes to this article because it's a pretty good review of the Big 7.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. All right. Take care. Thanks. Yeah, glad to help. I think a lot of times, you know, just they're different kinds of people. And it doesn't have to be age-related. Some people just want a simple phone that's made for making phone calls. And then there are those of us, and I think a lot of elders, certainly, who like the idea of a phone that's also a pocket computer that can do a lot more. My mom loves that. I mean, she FaceTimes me. She does. She can draw on it. She does art on it. I mean, it's just she loves it. So there's some good choices out there. I'll put a link to that Phone Arena article so you can see the variety. It's a growing market. And of course, as we baby boomers age, it's only going to get bigger. Sorry, young folks, we're still a dominant minority. Or something. Brenda, Southern California, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Brenda.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I have a question with Skype. Having a lot of troubles with it. I have the little icon on my computer, and for probably it's been more than a week, when I click on it, I get absolutely nothing. So my husband totally uninstalled it.
Okay.
And then we went through the process and tried to reinstall. It downloaded fine, but then when it said it, you know, Skype has to update, it would just update forever. We let it run in the entire night and it still wouldn't accept Skype. And then we went into the guts of the computer and it's still not there and it's not running. And we've tried numerous times.
What version of Windows are you using?
I have 8.
So Windows 10 people have had some problems with Skype, but Windows 8 should work just fine. There is a little bit of a confusion because, and Microsoft did this, and they blame them. There are 2 versions of Skype for Windows 8. There are 2 versions of many programs, including Internet Explorer for Windows 8. There's the Windows Store version, which has a big icon and is simple, and then there's the desktop version.
Yeah, I didn't like the desktop.
So you want, okay, there, that might be part of the problem. So you're using the Windows Store version.
Well, I don't know what I had on here originally. I don't know. But then when I tried to download, I thought, well, I'll download desktop, and that didn't work. So my husband said, no, you need to download the one, you know, for Windows. But neither one of them worked. And then when I did go into the computer, like just into the search engine of Google, typed in, you know, Skype, I could put in my password, my email and password, and I could come up with my account. But from my account, I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't make calls. I couldn't get to the home page, nothing.
So I would uninstall both the Windows Store version and the desktop version, or the desktop version. Just get all Skypes off there.
Okay, then, I think my husband did.
He probably did. And then install just the desktop version. I know you like the other one better.
Okay, just desktop. Okay.
Yeah. And see if that fixes things. You know, it's ironic because Microsoft owns Skype, so one would think it would work just fine on Windows.
Yeah, I don't mind going to a different program, but that just means my kids,
my
in-laws, you know, have to change too.
And I should point out that whatever's happening is local to you. I use Skype on Windows 8 all the time. It works fine. So it's not that it's in general broken.
Okay.
There's something going on your system, and I just don't know what it is. It's always possible. Now, have you used it lately? Have you tried to use it lately? Because you remember, there was last week a period of Skype outages, just for a day, though. So,
well, I tried numerous times last week, and then I tried a couple days ago, and I just couldn't even get it to come up on the screen.
Yeah, I'm puzzled.
You know, it would circle around, and then it would stop.
You're running Windows Update on a regular basis?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you might try, you know, Windows key I. Go to the Windows Updates at the bottom of that screen and make sure you got everything in there. Skype should be updated. By that. And it may be that update didn't happen or got broken and caused these problems. It's not unusual. But it's not typical either. I mean, in other words, people do have problems with Skype. It's doing a lot of voodoo, but it generally works. In fact, almost all of our shows we do on Skype with Skype video on a huge variety of platforms, and it almost always works. So it's something unique to your machine, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. Are you using it's not even the router. People are saying maybe the router is configured funny, but it's not that, because you can't even get Skype to run.
No, we couldn't. We could download it, but we couldn't have any updates and make it run, actually.
Can you log in on the Skype app? Do you get that whoop sound when? No. So there's something wrong with it, and I just don't know.
Okay.
Exactly what it is. Try Windows Update. Make sure you got the latest updates. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that is a bug in Skype. They cannot upgrade. Skype cannot upgrade. What is the fix for that one? Update failure. Can't connect. Error 1603. Skype should be more reliable. Can be a registry issue. All right, I'm going to put in the show notes, techguylabs.com, a note from Skype and a automated fix-it tool from Microsoft. I bet you this is what's gone on, is that Skype, it says Skype can sometimes have troubles with the registry. Maybe your registry's full or it got damaged, and it won't work. In fact, updates will be blocked once this happens. So your husband did the right thing by completely uninstalling and reinstalling Skype, but you may need to also fix something in your registry. So Microsoft has a automated fix-it tool, which is a registry fixer. Completely uninstall Skype from your computer after you run that tool. Or I'm sorry, get the tool, uninstall Skype, run the tool, then try reinstalling. So this fixes problems that programs cannot be installed or uninstalled. This removes corrupted registry keys. And so this is probably an issue. And this does happen in Windows 8. Yeah, the registry is such a terrible, terrible thing. The new broadcast version of Skype, we have used it. It is not any different. It's the same Skype, it just gives you more knobs you can twiddle. But it's all the same. Yeah, the registry is a nightmare. Well, in this case, Dr. Mom, this is an automated tool from Microsoft Fixit, which is probably reliable. It's much safer to do that because, yeah, you don't want to use the registry editor. That's just asking for trouble. Yeah, I don't know if they can ditch the registry at this point. It would cause such incompatibility problems. They might be stuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk high tech with Alex in Los Angeles, our next caller. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. My question is that on my previous iOS, I was able to ask Siri to text any of my contacts.
Yeah.
I got the new iPhone, and when I have upgraded to the new iOS, whatever, I asked the Siri to text, like, for instance, my one of my kids. And Siri's answer is, oh, I don't have any email or phone number in your contacts for contact.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know what's wrong.
Uh-oh. Have you looked in your contacts list to see if your kids are there?
Yeah, actually, my kids are my favorites.
Wow.
And
maybe Siri doesn't understand you anymore.
No, he does, because he says, oh, I don't have any contacts, for instance, for my name. She names the contact and says, no, I don't have any phone number for it. So previously I had a 4S, and it worked. But when I upgraded it to the new iOS, no longer worked. So I don't know. I got through settings and tried to figure it out, and nope, no luck.
Another thing you can do, by the way, in contacts, if you want to send, so I can say, my mother is this person, my father is this person. Let me just see if I can do this. Hey, Siri, send Mom a message. Let's see what she's, says, which mama you want? I only have one mama, Siri. But it's doing it. So I don't know. I think that what you should do is go into your contact list. I bet you here's what's going on. And sometimes this happens if you connect, for instance, Facebook to your contacts or some other social network to your contacts, which you can do, is the Facebook entry may not have a phone number. So what may be happening, and I bet you this is it, look into your contacts and see if you have multiple entries for the people you're trying to contact. If you do, it may be Siri's finding an entry that doesn't have a phone number in it, even though you might have some others. So my suspicion is that that's what's going on. What you can do is edit the contact and merge in the other versions. So you could say, yeah, this contact is the same as the three others with the same name. This happens to me all the time. Please merge those, and you'll make one master contact that has everything. You need to have the phone numbers in there, of course. Now, you might also log into iCloud, your iCloud account, and look at contacts there and see what shows up there. It does work. Let's put it this way. A, it works. iOS 9 works. I just did it, and it worked. I had to verify it. If it's not working, it's because something in your contacts, it's not, Siri can't find a phone number in there. And my guess is you've got, the only one thing to do is look through your contacts, find one person that is just one entry and has a phone number, and see if you can send them a text. It's a nice feature, isn't it? Especially if you're driving. The new iOS, I guess it's the new iPhone only. It's not iOS 9, but the new iPhones allow you to speak directly to Siri without pressing a button. So even more handy when you're driving, you can just say, I shouldn't call her that name because I don't want to wake up phones all over the country. So I'll say, instead of Siri, I'll say Shlomo, okay? So you say, hey, Shlomo, and she'll wake up. Send a message to Mom regarding, you know, cheese doodles. Can you buy some more? And she'll actually dictate that message. I don't think she reads it back to you, which would be nice, wouldn't it? If she said, here's what I thought you said. I think she just shows it on the screen. So that's not ideal for, but this is a good step forward in safety while you're driving. It may be there's just something with your contacts. So I'd go through and clean that all up, Alex. I think that's probably it. Karen is in Colorado. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, Leo. I have been a Virgin Mobile customer for years, only mainly because of the pricing. I like
great
the $35 a month, but yeah. I'm finding their service is getting worse and worse, especially as I travel. I just spent a month in California, and in my sister's house in El Monte, California, I could not make any calls, receive calls.
That's because Virgin is Sprint.
Right.
And if Sprint doesn't work where you are, and Sprint is very spotty, I find, Virgin won't work either.
Right. So I'm finding that more and more. So I'm thinking I have to go on to one of the bigger carriers. I hate to do it, but... as I travel more, I mean, for safety reasons.
Yeah, yeah. So now, there's no carrier that works everywhere, unfortunately.
Right.
I wish there were.
And I live in a very remote area in Colorado, and my phone works fine here.
Yeah, so that's the first thing to do is make sure that whoever you go with, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint's going to have the same problem. So I'd say leave Sprint off or T-Mobile. Make sure they work where you live.
Right, yeah, it will either be AT&T or Verizon. They're the best in the area.
Okay.
But I am looking at that new Nexus phone, and I was wondering if, should I order it now, mainly to get that $50 credit, or should I wait for reviews?
I would always wait for reviews. It looks on the surface great, but lots of phones look great on paper, and then I find I get it in my hand, and I go, oh, it only gets 4 hours battery life or something like that, and that could be a deal breaker. On the other hand, you're right. If you order it now, you get 3 months of Google Music for free, and you get a $50 Play Store credit towards the apps. There's another thing to think about. You could also use Google Fi as your carrier if you get one of these new Nexus phones. Mm-hmm. Now, Fi is kind of like Virgin Mobile. Virgin Mobile is an MVNO, Mobile Virtual Network Operator, a company that resells somebody else's service.
Okay.
Fi does something interesting, though. It resells T-Mobile and Sprint. So if Sprint works best at home, you'll get Sprint. But then when you travel and you go somewhere that Sprint doesn't work, as you've found, it will use T-Mobile, doubling your chance of having a good connection. Now, I would love it if it did all four.
Right.
But it doesn't. It only does a Sprint and T-Mobile.
I've seen that. I kind of went onto their site, and it says you have to get an invite or something.
Yeah, I wonder if I have an invite I could send you. Let me look and see real quickly. I think that's opening up. In fact, the first thing to do would be apply for an invite right now and see if you get it. I think they're opening up quite a bit. And that is one real advantage. And by the way, I have to say, the price is good. You pay $20 for all the voice services, including text messaging, unlimited text messaging. And then you pay as you go $10 a gigabyte for data. And you only pay for what you use. And it's fractional, so it doesn't have to be a whole gigabyte at a time.
Okay.
So I've found it's been a very good deal for me. So this might be, for somebody like you, a really great choice. I don't know if I have any. I'm looking. Maybe they don't give out invites. Maybe that's not how it works. I don't see any invites in here. I would love to send you one. But I have a feeling if you apply, you'll be able to get one pretty quickly. Certainly in the 6 weeks that it would take to get this new phone. It is a little bit scary to get a phone that isn't out yet. Yeah,
right.
Because,
so that's, I mean, you know, I've been doing a lot of reviews. I mean, not the reviews, but looking at sites, and it looks really good. Or is there another phone that about?
It looks great. If you want to go Android, it looks, I would say it's probably the best Android phone out there. Mm-hmm. And the 6P in particular, because it has a massive battery.
Yes.
So the expectation is battery life will be good. The camera has already been tested by a company called DxO Mark. They do really good testing.
I saw that it's number two now, rated.
Yep.
Number two in smartphones.
Yep.
So.
It's missing OIS, which is always a little worrisome. The optical image stabilization helps in low light. However, it has other features that make it very good, including very large pixels, 1.55 micron pixels, which I've never seen on a camera phone. That should really improve low light performance, laser focusing. And, you know, on paper, in every respect, this looks like the phone. And I have ordered one, but I won't be able to review it until November. I suspect Google will have seeded some people, some of the more famous bloggers, with phones, and you should see reviews soon. And to me, on paper, this is going to be the best Android phone in the market because it's pure Google, it's Marshmallow, They've got
now,
the
what
specs.
What exactly does that mean? Google?
So other phone companies, HTC, Samsung, LG, they take Android and they skin it. They put their own user interface on top of it. Sometimes that's a good thing. There are things that Google has not put into Android that are added. Samsung adds quick settings, for instance, which is very nice. A battery percentage, which is very nice to see that on the top of the screen there. Google doesn't do that. But in general, the advantage of pure Android is Google will keep it up to date. It'll get updated faster. Bugs will get fixed faster. And you don't have to worry about the weird stuff that Samsung and other companies put on there. I personally prefer it, but it is a matter of personal taste. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I'm talking about the EcoTank. I'm hearing myself talk about the EcoTank. I love this! How bold, how brave is Epson to do this? Like every inkjet printer manufacturer, the business relies on you buying the printer and then buying more inkjet cartridges. And in order to do this, what they're doing, they have to make the price of the printer a little bit higher because you've got to buy 2 years of ink, in effect. And it turns out customers are smart. They understand that the reason the price on the box is higher is you're getting all the ink for 2 years, and you won't ever have to change it in that 2 years' time. You won't have to order more cartridges. Everything you need is there, and they are embracing the EcoTank. That's so, it makes me so happy because this is the right thing to do. This is what customers want. Not everybody. If you didn't do a lot of printing, the cartridges still make sense for you. There's certainly lots of reasons why you might want to use cartridges. But if you like the idea of having 11,000 pages in between updating your ink, 8,500 color pages, 2 years of ink, 50 cartridges of ink. That's right. It's equivalent of 50 ink cartridge sets. I think the one I'm going to get is the ET4550. It's a wireless all-in-one. It comes with the equivalent of 50 inkjet cartridge sets. 8,500 pages of color. That's 2 years. Still has the precision core, of course, that super high-speed, vivid color, the laser-quality black text, and all the stuff a laser printer doesn't do, like auto two-sided printing, the auto document feeder, easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. This is so great. And look at all the models now with the EcoTank. That's the one I'm getting, the Workforce 4550. What, I love this idea. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. Learn more at Epson.com/EcoTank. They got the big one, too, for the serious, you know, the big business. 20,000 black pages. 20,000 color pages. Wow. Wow. Nice. Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. And we thank Epson so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. And just, you know what, believing in customers. No, you know, doing the right thing for customers and believing that customers will get it. I just love that. Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that stuff with chips in it at 8888 Ask Leo. I love problem solving. We do a lot of that. So call in with your problems. And, you know, you could also problem solve, too. If you hear something on the show and you say, I think I've got an answer, you can always call or you can join the chat room or you can leave a message on our website. Chat room and the website and even the phone number are all available at techguylabs.com. Tech guy, that's me. The labs, imagine me in a white lab coat with Bunsen burners and beakers and safety goggles. Yeah, that's it. The techguylabs.com. And you can comment there. So you can, you know, we divide each page, the website, into pages. Each page is a show. Within each show, hour by hour, and within each hour, call by call. So it's really easy to drill down to that question and say, I got an idea. I have a suggestion. We really appreciate that. There's no sign up. It's free. You know, we don't charge you for any of this because we don't need to. And so that's nice. I like to make this freely available as a resource for everyone. You don't even have to listen to the show to use the Tech Guy Labs. Anybody can. Let's move on. Our next caller is from Los Angeles. David is on the line. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hello, Leo. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. So watch your language. No, just kidding. What can I do for you?
Well, actually, it was a comment about the lady who had problems running Skype. She had two different programs on her Windows 8 machine.
Yeah.
That may have been conflicting. And I was listening to your advice. Now, one thing I always do, you know, before I put on any new program, is I manually do a manual system restore point. Okay?
Not a bad idea. That way you can always go back in time to that restore point.
Exactly. And I was wondering, in your advice to her, you didn't advise her to make to restore her system back to when her Skype was originally working.
Not a bad idea. My reason I don't recommend it all the time is because my experience is it works. It's very hit or miss. But if you found that was helpful, it's a very good thing. I should have recommended it, and I'm glad you called to suggest it. Most of the time when you make a big change to your system like that, Microsoft automatically sets a system restore point. So if you if you run system restore from your control panel, you'll see that there are a bunch of system restore points that you can go back to. It's like going back in time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a very good tip. I appreciate that. Good suggestion.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it, David. Moving on to Dan in Covina, California. Hi, Dan.
How you doing, Leo? Boy, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Good to have you.
Listen, I really enjoy your show, but I do have a situation that happened about a month ago. Have an HP computer, had Windows 8 on it from the factory. It's a couple years old, still running good. About a month ago, received an email from Microsoft noting that I get Windows 10 free on this download.
Right.
So I did, and I got it. Okay, now I realize when you get these newer programs that on startup, the computer's going to run a little slower starting up, and that's one of the problems. So I kind of figured that might happen. But what's also happened, photos now appear a little bit more blurry, and they even print out blurry.
Ugh.
And now also the printing, it's kind of reset the page setup scheme. So like any flyers I've created, and I go back to print one.
That's frustrating.
Everything's all over the place.
All of that frustrating and not typical. You shouldn't, Windows 10 should speed up boot, not slow it down. So I understand.
Yeah.
You're very kind to say, oh, I can understand that'll happen. That shouldn't happen. It should speed things up. I have no idea why it's making the photographs lower resolution. That's completely not supposed to happen. And the printing, I can't understand. I do understand perhaps the printing settings resetting or getting wonky, but they should, once you fix them, remember them. Does it not remember the changes?
It does. No, on the printing, that's not a problem. I can go back and tweak,
okay,
and then everything's
You just have
fine.
To do that. And sometimes that'll happen. But, boy, it worries me about the blurry photos and even printing out that way. Because Windows 10 upgrade is not supposed to modify your data at all. The data is supposed to stay there. I've heard a lot of problems with Windows 10. Microsoft rushed it a little bit.
Right.
I've been using it without issue, and that's one of the reasons I said it's okay to go ahead, and maybe I was wrong in that recommendation. Microsoft originally thought Windows 10 would ship in the fall, but they decided kind of at the last minute to get it out July 29th. My thinking is they wanted to get it out in time for the back-to-school season, a deadline Microsoft has rarely made. So
right.
There's a...
I've heard you say that to other people on the phone, but my question now, I'm wondering, is there a way for me to just to back up and go out of...
There is.
I mean,
you have
and go back to 8?
You have 30 days to do that. So if you if you go back into your system recovery options, it will say go back to Windows 8. And you know what? This might be a good time to do that. I hope it fixes these things. The time to go to Windows 10, I'm starting to think, is now after they release the big update. In November, they call it Threshold. So next month, it's not that long from now. And I think this was the Windows 10 they meant to ship. They planned to ship. And they rushed it a little bit to hit this back-to-school deadline. Threshold 2 is the code name for this update. So you can watch the Windows blogs, places like Therot.com, my friend Paul Therot, and allaboutmicrosoft.com, and watch for an announcement that Threshold is going out. Should you update then? No. No, you should wait till the fix to Threshold comes out So Threshold will undoubtedly introduce new problems, new issues. I've been using it because I joined the Windows Insider program. This was their early public beta program. And if you were on that, you get to continue to be ahead of everybody else, which can be a mixed blessing. Threshold 2 seems to work okay, but I would still wait until the fix to Threshold 2. So I'm thinking late November, early December. You know, the word will go out. Listen to this show. The word will go out. Finally, Windows 10 is safe. The problems you're having, you shouldn't be having. I haven't experienced them myself. I don't know why. It could be, perhaps, your hard drive's having issues. That can slow down boot, cause weird things like that to happen. And maybe when Windows 10 installed, it kind of brought those issues to the forefront. If that's the case, rolling back to Windows 8 won't fix it. So if the problems persist after your rollback, maybe there's something else going on, and Windows 10 just surfaced the problem. I apologize, because I really did say it's safe to go to Windows 10. I felt like it was. I'd installed it on numerous machines without problems. I've been having a great time with it. I like it, and perhaps this was why I said it. I like it so much better than Windows 8. I feel that Microsoft listened to us, fixed the menu issues. Just there weren't bugs in Windows 8. Windows 8 was stable and reliable, but it just, the user interface was horrible. And maybe because of that, mea culpa, because of that, I was a little anxious to get to Windows 10. Maybe it wasn't time to go to Windows 10. I just don't know. I should also say I haven't had any trouble with it. So I don't know what the answer is. You can roll back. You have 30 days to do that if everything worked properly. That's a big if also, isn't it? Pat is in Cypress, California. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hey, I'm one of those that switched from Microsoft 8.1 to our Windows 10. And now when I want to power off my laptop, HP laptop, I'll go to the...
Hang on for a second. We got to run because I'm hearing that magic music, but I'll get right back to you right after these words. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm currently up to date, as I see here, with, let me close Edge, 10.547. So this is Threshold 2. But I don't use it like crazy. Crimson says that there are some Windows Central forums that do talk about this blurry new photos problem. And that shouldn't happen. That just doesn't seem. Photos blurry in the new photo apps for Windows. Wow. Huh. Let's put that in the show notes. Just know when browsing, almost all the pictures are blurry, low res. It sounds like the app, right? Oh, look at that. That's terrible. Well, it's hard to tell, actually. Same photo is fine in Windows Photo Viewer. It's just the app that makes the pictures blurry. So that's good news. Print it with the Windows Photo Viewer. Well, this guy is the opposite. Windows photo apps are clear. It's the photo viewer that's messed up. Holy cow. Well, that would be one fix, then, is to you don't have to use the Windows Photos app. Try another app. What you don't want is for the photos to be modified, but it doesn't sound like they have been. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, well, now that we've mentioned the blurry photo problem in Windows 10, I'm hearing from a lot of people who share the same problem as our last caller. Apparently, it's the new Photos app, which is showing a downgraded version of the photo, probably to load it faster. I will post in the website's, in our Tech Guy Labs notes, an article from our forum posts from WindowsCentral.com that to say that if you open it with the photo viewer, the photo's fine. So that's the good news. The photo isn't, you know, downgraded or damaged, just the display of the photo. But if you print from photos, the printout will also be downgraded. Nice job. I'm sure they'll fix that. But in the meanwhile, you could use a different program. Your photos apparently are intact. Use a different program, whether it's Microsoft's Photo Viewer or Picasa or something else, to open, view, and print the photos. That's one quick fix anyway. I guess I just don't use Windows 10 enough to really notice these problems. I have a Windows 10 laptop, and I have Windows 10 on a desktop, and I use it, but I don't use it all the time kind of as a production machine, and I haven't any problems, but maybe I'm just not banging on it hard enough. But we're hearing enough problems now that I think maybe it's time to wait. Don't upgrade right away if you haven't. Gail in Huntington Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Leo. What a thrill. I get to talk to my very own computer god.
Well, I hope I can help you. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got one simple question and one more complicated one. The simple one is that I would love to listen to your show live on my phone when I'm not close to a radio. And I don't seem to be able to know which button to press. I wind up with the Twit logo. And no Leo and no audio, and I don't know whether I should use Bitstream or Ustream or Gravity.
I don't blame you, yeah. So
have you got any advice for a Samsung S4 person?
Yeah, there are certainly, a couple of things. First of all, you can use the website directly and go to twit.tv, and there's a live button on the website, and that will allow you to, if you select audio, listen live. There are also Twit apps written by fans, and if you search for those in the Google Play Store, you'll find a number of them. I don't know which one is the best. I've been using the one by FCon. I don't know if that's still there, but that's been a good one for me. We are writing our own because we realize it's a little bit confusing for people. I want you to be able to listen.
When you listen
through the podcast network, you're hearing it live. But of course, there's the local radio stations also stream it, so you might find a station that streams it.
Yeah, I've tried that, and it's not been real successful. My best use is to listen to an episode, download it after the fact.
But I want you to be able to listen live. Otherwise, how can you call
in? I do
too. Right?
All right, I'll mess around with the store and see if I can find what you're talking about.
Yeah, but you should be able to also use your browser.
When you write your own and announce it, be sure
I will
announce it. Okay,
we're working on it right now.
You ready for my computer saga?
Yes.
Okay. I have a Dell XPS 8000 that's about 5.5 years old, and it's been so trouble-free, and it's my fourth Dell, and it's just been a wonderful computer. I have no complaints.
Yes.
I'm an old Dell user. It serves a small business as the main computer, and everybody else that works with me uses laptops, and we all connect, and everything has been working flawlessly. A month ago, the new Asus modem that was 3 months out of warranty went down, and I couldn't get it back up. So I was so mad at Asus because I didn't get the help I wanted. I went and bought a D-Link and got that installed, and then everything was up again. And 2 weeks later, I got all kinds of sounds and behaviors that led me to think the hard drive was going. So I took it to my favorite computer guru, who agreed, yes, indeedy, it's bad. So we put a new Western Digital hard drive in there and transferred all my files. I do have Carbonite, so I'm backed up. So I've had the new hard drive for 3 weeks now, and everything has been working flawlessly. And last night when I was working, all of a sudden the keyboard stopped. Well, maybe I need new batteries. So I went and put new batteries in. I turned it off, put new batteries in, went up this morning to make sure that everything was okay, and I got those dreaded beeps from the computer when I went to turn it on.
Yes, the power on self-test errors. That's before you see anything on the screen, you're getting beep, 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 beep.
Beep, 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 beep. And the flashing amber light on the on switch.
What that means
is
something. It means there's something so seriously wrong that it can't get to a screen to show you. So all PCs, when they first start up, do a self-test, and if there's an error at that point, maybe RAM has come unseated, maybe the motherboard has failed.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things that can cause it. It just can't go. even the video card maybe has popped out. It just can't go on. Is it a laptop? It's a desktop,
no,
right?
No, it's a big desktop.
Yeah. You could just open it up and look inside, make sure all the cards and cables are properly connected.
It's 5.5 years old. Is it worth fixing?
No, I wouldn't spend money on it, no.
Yeah. Okay, so that takes me to my next question.
Yeah.
I'm going to replace it, and I'll probably, because I've been a happy Dell customer for so long, probably get another Dell Optiplex or a new studio or whatever.
I only buy Dell. I love Dell.
Okay, do I want to get Windows 10 on it?
Yeah, you probably don't have much choice. And I think it's, you know, after I just, after everybody's called in and blah, blah. But it's a little different when you buy a machine made for Windows 10 that's never had any other version of Windows on it. I think you're going to have fewer issues.
Okay, now, in terms of getting my files on a new system, am I better off asking the guy that put my hard drive in to transfer the files, or am I better off calling Carbonite and saying help?
You could do either. I would start by getting the new computer. It's Windows 10. You mm-hmm. transfer your Carbonite account over. You log into Carbonite. You say restore. See how everything is. I think you're going to be fine. Don't throw away that old new hard drive, right?
Keep the new hard drive.
Yeah, the new old. Don't throw that away because that's got everything on it. That's a backup. And if after a while you say, oh, I'm missing something, you can always go to the guy and say, could you get this off of there? I would keep your old computer. I generally do say, keep your old computer for a few months anyway to make sure that if there's anything on there you really need, you still have it. And if you decide to sell or give away the old computer, you might just take the hard drive out of it and keep that.
Well, that was my thought. If I could take the old hard drive out and figure out a way to make it a slave drive to be accessed if I need.
Totally can do that.
I totally can do that?
Totally can do that, yeah.
Even though it doesn't have housing and all that?
Yeah, well, if you get a new tower, a desktop.
Yes.
You'll have space for a second drive. You can just put it in there. Just make sure you don't boot to it. That's fine. You don't want to boot to the old drive. You want to boot
no.
to the new drive.
The fact that I've got Windows 7 as its operating
doesn't matter.
System won't hurt anything.
No, you'll be able to read the files and everything just as if it were a backup drive.
Leo, you've just lowered my anxiety level.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a good idea because then you don't have to worry about losing anything. You can also go to a store and buy a USB enclosure. Take that old hard drive out, put it in there. Those are normal desktop hard drives in those USB enclosures. Don't get one that's small that's designed for a laptop drive. Get one that's designed for a desktop drive.
Is this something I'd buy at Fry's?
Fry's will have it, absolutely. Say, yeah. I want one for a 5.25-inch drive. You put the drive in there, and now it's a USB drive. You don't have to have it in there all the time. You just have it whenever you need it. You plug in the USB cable.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, Leo, you still are my computer god.
I'll give you one more tip. TuneIn Internet Radio, great app for Android. We're also on that. Just search for Twit Live.
Internet Radio.
Tune in.
I found you on iHeart Radio.
And we're on iHeart also. Yep. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What the? So I just booted into Windows 10 and blue screen of death.
And a sad face,
Your
too.
PC ran into a problem and needs to restart. We're just collecting some error info, and then we'll restart for you. Jeez. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lots of ways to listen to this show. Of course, your local radio station's the best. I should hasten to say that. They're great. We really appreciate their support. 200 strong all across the country. And then there's iHeartRadio. I can't remember if they have the live version. I think they do. TuneIn Internet Radio has a live stream. Lots of ways to listen. And I hope you will. I'm glad you did. Chris on the line from Florida City, our next caller. Hi, Chris.
Hey.
Hey.
Like the old days when I used to call you all the time.
Hey. Oh, yeah. Hey.
Whole Foods Market, remember?
I do.
I'll keep it short and simple because I don't want to keep you. I know you got a lot of callers. Thanks for taking the call. The financing on the new iPad Pro, it's really confusing. Apple doesn't seem to know too much. And is it better to just go in and buy it in November, or should I do the whole credit deal?
I'll tell you, the financing on the iPhones is pretty good. Because it includes Apple Care Plus, when you divide the monthly fee by 1 or 2 years, it actually works out to about the same price. It's competitive with all the other phone carriers. The financing on an iPad, that's a different matter because Apple's not competing with carriers on the iPad. And the iPad Pro is a different matter still because, well, it's not out for a while. So I imagine we'll learn more about the financing details. You know, financing usually costs you more because you're going to be paying, in effect, interest. You're borrowing the money and paying interest. The interesting thing is Apple has sweetened the pot so much with the iPhone that it doesn't cost a whole lot more. It's not quite 0%, but it's close to it. I don't think it works that way for the iPad. I actually haven't looked at financing options on the iPad. So I can't really advise you on which is better. The advantage, of course, as with financing anything, is you pay a monthly fee that's lower than, you know, that's maybe more affordable. I think Apple Finance maybe not as good. It's better than a credit card. So don't pay it off on a credit card. But you might be able to get a better price on the money if you get it elsewhere. I don't know. It just varies. You know, I haven't really looked at their deal lately. I know the phone deal is good. I have compared that with paying it outright, and it really works out to be a push. So
just kind of give everybody a little bit more time until maybe sometime in November.
I think as you get closer, you'll have a better idea. You can't even pre-order it yet. So,
yeah,
you know, what are you going to use it for? You know you want
Well, I have a late 2009 iMac. We're looking to get a new one of those. But we both run a business here at home, and one of us needs to be on something at the same time. And so I figured maybe the Pro might be a good idea to have me on the Pro, and he can be on the iMac, and he'll have a new iMac 27 with a super drive. So, because we both run separate businesses from home, and it just seems like it'd be a good idea. But it's also a very expensive investment. It's over $1,000 for that device.
Yeah, and I think that it's not really going to be like the existing iPads, and it's not really going to be like a Macintosh. It's going to be kind of a new thing that really is best suited to applications designed specifically to take advantage of that real estate.
Okay.
So I wouldn't rush to get the iPad Pro. Of course, I will, but
right.
that's my job.
Right.
My suspicion is all of that real estate really is best when used with applications designed for it. Now, of course, it does have a split screen, so you could do two apps at once. It will have a keyboard, so it's sort of like a touch-first operating system. Oh, but it's not quite a Mac, though, unless they add, you know, file system features and things like that. So I think it's too early to tell. We got to get one. We got to play with it. The pencil looks really intriguing. If you're an artist, if you do design, it's going to be a great input device. It's going to be great if you do video editing. It looks pretty impressive. Photo editing, GarageBand or music mixing. Those are the things that is going to be most. They're most naturally suited to the size and user interface. Productivity tool, maybe not. Maybe not so much. Maybe get a MacBook. Or something like that with a built-in keyboard. Actually, it's the same keyboard, isn't it? They basically have the MacBook keyboard as a detachable keyboard for the iPad Pro. Again, the jury's out. It's so attractive to read about this stuff on paper, and then they do the demos, and Apple's so good at making these beautiful demos where you just go, oh, that's so gorgeous. But then you get it home. It's like maybe not. You know, it doesn't live up quite to the hype. I would wait for the reviews. I really would. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Brian in Fountain Valley, California is next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, my wife and I are huge fans.
Thank you.
We listen to you every weekend.
Oh, bless you. Does she listen under duress, or is she happy to listen?
She's happy to listen.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel for the spouse who's forced to listen.
Oh, no, we both love tech.
Good.
I'm so lucky.
Nice.
So
you lucky. Are lucky. That's good.
Yeah. Well, we have we keep two PCs running at all times. We run a business from the house, and so one is always a backup. We can always stand up, walk over, sit down, and be right where we were before.
Very nice.
Both are Windows 7. We got the invite. We waited for 2 weeks, loaded 10. It's working beautifully. It's fantastic. We love it. So you were saying earlier that some people have been calling saying that Windows 10 wasn't working for them. For us, it's working amazing.
Yeah. My sense is that for most people, it's fine. But
yeah.
But enough people are feeling pain that I worry that maybe there's some things not ready for prime time.
Huh. Well, yeah. This is where the problem came in. I loved it so much, I figure I'm going to do the factory reset, get rid of all the old 7, so it's running 10 only. I go in to do that, and I take all of the precautions. I make a repair disk for Windows 10.
Good.
I make a repair drive for Windows 10.
Yeah.
But I don't make an image because I don't want the 7 stuff. I hit restore, and this is what happens. I have a hard drive crash, 39%
through. Oh, no.
Yeah. So I figure, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to download the Windows 10 ISO and see if I can.
At this point, you still can do a restore because, well, it depends how the hard drive crashed. You probably still have a restore partition on that drive.
It's broken. No, it's.
It got broken?
Oh. Yep. The whole thing. I mean, I could tap it. And
here's the good news. That Windows 10 upgrade is now married to that hardware. You don't actually have the Windows 10 upgrade. The machine does. So you can go to Microsoft, and I believe you can get it restored with Windows 10 because you own it officially. Let me have to look into that, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody's saying in the chat room, this can't be true, is it? That Apple's extended payment plan ends up costing 22.99% APR. What? That's more than most credit cards. I'm not a financial advisor. There are other radio shows that do that. My suggestion is you check carefully and maybe shop around. There are other ways you could buy that certainly would be less than that. Certainly be less than that. Let's see here. Lewis in New Jersey. Hello, Lewis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, great to talk with you.
Thanks for calling. 12.99%. Well, that's not so bad, Mike. Go ahead, Lewis.
Well, one of your earlier callers had mentioned he was having a problem with the flash drive and that he wasn't able to use Recover.
Right.
And I know I've gone through that with two, at least, if not three, of the other recovery utilities. None of them worked. And I just got this bug. I said, you know, I've used Total Commander on the Windows 95, 98, et cetera, computers. I actually loaded Total Commander. Let me go look at it. I got the...
Total Commander. There's a name from the past.
There it is. I'm using, looks like 7.5 on this one. But what I did is I loaded the Commander. Then I went to Synchronize Directories. And then I pull up the directory that I put on my hard drive of the computer. That is going to be the backup directory for the flash. And since there's no files in it, it's going to compare the blank folder with the flash drive.
Yeah.
It balked a bunch of times, including giving me an error message. Let's see.
I know what happened here, and I could tell you what happened. Total Commander is, of course, not a file recovery tool. But what it did do, which is maybe just as good, is it didn't give up. So normally when you do a file read, the operating system will do it a number of times. It's not going to do it forever. After a while, it just goes, you know what, I can't read this, and moves on. It turns out that even bad sectors sometimes can be read, but it takes a lot of attempts. My friend Steve Gibson's SpinWrite program works this way. It doesn't time out. Now, what it means is that the data recovery could take a very, very long time because it might read thousands of times and then finally get that data. Oh, I got it. It worked the 1,001th time and then copy it. And, in fact, I've heard lots of stories of people using SpinWrite, which is a similar idea. And it takes weeks, months, even I heard one guy it took a year of just running, but eventually got the data. So that comes from, and that's what Total Commander is doing. Total Commander was a replacement for a classic Windows tool called Norton Commander. You may remember from Norton Utilities. And somebody's made a shareware version and still sells it. It's Windows 10 compatible. I can't even believe it. But it's not a data recovery tool. It's just a copying tool. But, you know, we're in a file viewer and all of that. But my, you know, it's kind of a all-in-one utility. But my suspicion is it, like SpinWrite, doesn't give up easily trying to read a file. So the reason that worked for you, Lewis, and it might in fact work for our caller, is a lot of times what looks like a bad sector, an unreadable sector, isn't. It's just not readable in the 10 times or whatever that Windows gives it. Windows just gives up. It gives up too easily. If you're patient and you just don't give up, maybe you could read it. So that's actually a great tip. It's a shareware program. It means you can try it for free. And it does indeed work with Windows 10. There's even a 64-bit version now. I'm thrilled that they're still around. And it's just, that's a classic. So thank you, Lewis. Good tip. Total Commander might do the trick, if nothing else does. Francis is in San Diego. Hi, Francis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Francis.
Hey, I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller and just love your program.
Oh, I'm so glad you listen. Thank you.
I do. Every Saturday. That's
nice.
And Sunday, too.
Wow.
So I really appreciate it, and I learned so much from you, and I'm hoping. I keep thinking, oh, I need to ask Leo this question. And so here I get to. It's probably something real simple for you, but I'm not a techie person, so I'm extra cautious about stuff. I've got a Dell XP, and I think it's got Windows 7 on it.
Okay.
And, of course, we know it's not being...
7 is still being updated. Not XP, but 7 is still being updated.
But the XP, I guess, is...
So you don't have Windows 7. You have Windows XP.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Windows XP.
Okay.
I told you. Yeah, no techie.
No, that's fine. No, I'm just clarifying so I understand. So you have a pretty old system, and it's Windows XP, and they stopped updating that last April.
And all I use it for is just to, you know, just search through some sites, stores, whatever.
Okay.
But the video part stopped working to where, you know, if I go to a site and I want to, you know, watch a program or something like that, I can't.
Yeah, that's a flash issue, probably.
Yes. And I'm a little bit hesitant about downloading flash because I've heard stuff.
Well, what's worse is to have an old flash on there. So if you're going to have flash, and you do, you should always keep it up to date because the old flashes had terrible bugs in them. So, yeah,
flash. Are you sure I do have it?
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, you were watching video, right?
Yeah,
you have it. It's just not updated. And what happens is it just stops working. You know the best thing to do? If you're using Windows XP, one way to, there's a few ways to continue to use this safely. Number one, of course, all the bad stuff comes in through the internet. So anything that gets online has to be kept up to date. The good news is even though Microsoft is not keeping Internet Explorer up to date, Google has said we will keep Chrome, their browser, up to date, and Firefox has said we will keep our browser, Firefox, up to date. So my suggestion is use Internet Explorer one last time to get Chrome. It's google.com/Chrome. It's free. It has Flash built in, so just by using it, your video should come back.
Oh, my gosh, that's so cool. Okay, so google.com/Chrome.
It's a free download. And once you get that, stop using Internet Explorer. That's not safe. Another way to make XP safer is to not use your administrator account, but to use a limited user account.
How do I turn off the administrator? Or maybe
well, you don't turn it off. You're in it right now. So what you do while you're an administrator is go to the control panel, the users and accounts control panel, and make a new account. This will be your day-to-day account. You don't want to get rid of the administrator account by any means. You just want to make a new account. Actually, there's a couple of ways to do this. One way would be to make a new administrator account with a new password. You know what I do with my mom? I have the same login, and I make the password be the opposite of hers. So if her password is start me up, I make the back. I make it backwards, P-U-E-M-T-R-A-S, start me up backwards. Because it's not like you have to keep it secret. You want to remember it, but you do want it to be a different password. So once you do that, make that administrator account. Call it admin, in fact. And then log out of your current account into the administrator account using the backwards password. And then go into the accounts settings and downgrade your everyday account. Say that's a limited user. That's the one you're going to keep using all the time. You always have to have an administrator account for installing software, for updating software, for downloading Chrome. You should do that while you're an administrator. But the rest of the time, just use a limited account. You do those two things. Use Chrome and use a limited account. Maybe a little less convenient, but you will be safe. And you can continue to use XP, as far as I'm concerned, forever.
Oh, that's so great, because I love it.
Yeah, if you like it, why should you get rid of it? Hey, thanks for the call. Thank you all for listening. Nathan Staten, musical director. Kim Schaffer, our phone ranger. I'll see y'all next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.